Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Capital Market Series with the New Gen Mindset Podcast. I'm Dan Quazel here with Nick Tartaglia. Nick, we had some massive news in the cannabis space last week that has caught the entire sector by, I don't even know if it's appropriate to say this, but it literally caught on fire to the upside in the most positive way. So big movements happening there right now.
It's some, you know, some kind of fire being built up again in the capital market space. And I guess it's kind of a good thing because it could bring back some attention on certain agricultural ecosystems that have kind of been neglected or not really paid attention to, bring back some discussions that people should be having and definitely paying attention to. And it's nice to see kind of the entrepreneurial spirit in certain of these ecosystems that people don't really seem to be aware of.
Yeah, and they always say whatever comes up must come down. And it seems like we've seen a resurgence in the space. Something that doesn't necessarily get talked about quite frequently is, what about hemp? What are the industrial or commercial uses of hemp? And I find hemp very fascinating because you can actually build houses with hemp and they actually provide a pretty significant infrastructure. Now, I could be right or wrong. We'll have to see about that. But what we wanted to do here today is have a conversation and present to our audience, so all our listeners, a new investment opportunity that just got listed about not even a month ago. It's trades on the TSXV. The company is called Hemp Alta. And with us here today is the president, CEO, and director, Darren Bundar. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
So Darren, at the beginning of the podcast, we always like to kind of get a sense of who the person is that comes on. So do you mind giving us a little bit of background? Tell us about you, where you come from, and then, you know, how it led you to get part of, to become part of Hemp Alta.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's hard to believe that I'm 50. So I've been celebrating my 50th birthday all year, along with some other life milestones. But certainly with becoming 50, I also recognize that I've been an entrepreneur for 25 plus years now. And I guess that makes me a mature entrepreneur when I also realize that we're hiring some staff that are, half my age and I'm older than their parents. So I've got some bruises and happy to share those. My entrepreneurial journey really started as a kid. I was always fascinated. I didn't know what the term entrepreneurship was, but always found myself wanting to start a business, whether it was delivering flyers or selling X, Y, and Z. You know, I was always kind of interested in that avenue and path. And I got a job. I did my MBA at the University of Alberta. And this goes back to the late 90s, and got a job actually working for the university. And so, you know, I guess in my parents' mind and in everybody's mind that's not an entrepreneur, oh, you're set. I'm in the university. I got a good paying job. I'm going to work 40 hours a week. And I lasted about 4 to 6 weeks. I just knew it in my heart that it wasn't right for me. And I left just because I feel like I had my education. I had a backstop if I needed it, but I really want to pursue a career in entrepreneurship. And I didn't know exactly what form that would take. My grandfather was in retail. I started a company called Bonders Furniture here in Calgary about 70 years ago, which is still family owned by my uncle and my cousin. So I kind of had some familiarity with retail. And by pure fluke, I ended up opening up a store called Watch It, which was a watch store, essentially. We sold fashion watches kind of right before the fashion watch craze took off. So really for about 20 years, I pursued that business. I nurtured it. We developed it into a franchise system, and we ended up opening about 30 stores across Canada and major malls right across the country. And that was really my breeding grounds, where we learned everything from, you know, how to buy, how to retail, how to sell, how to brand. Retail is really amazing because you can, you know, touch all parts of a business ecosystem. So that's what we did. And I guess in about, in 2018, 17, there was this company called Apple that launched the Apple Watch. And that was really a huge hit on the watch industry and us. They took 50% of the market share within a year. And our company really started to struggle as people weren't wearing watches anymore. They were relying on their phones. And we ended up in trouble. So going from the high of high to the low of lows, we had to restructure that company, actually ran it through a bankruptcy process. But we emerged out on the other end, amazingly. And around the same time, Justin Trudeau, came to power and talked about the legalization of recreational cannabis. I guess throughout my years, I've always been a kind of a cannabis connoisseur, dating back to those 90, the 90s, where people were drinking and stuff, and I was the guy in the corner smoking weed just because I didn't really like booze. So if there was a guy and a team that could execute on how to build a cool recreational retail brand, we really felt that we could do it. So out of the watch business emerged Spiritleaf, and we built that company from 2017 to 2021. We through COVID, through all the regulations, all the changes, we built 116 stores across 50 cities, 6 provinces. We brought that public, which was my first foray into the public markets. And eventually sold to Sundial for $131 million. So from bankrupt to hero in 4 years, that was a really kind of a game-changing entrepreneurial experience for me. So that was it. And unexpectedly, I didn't end up continuing with the company, which was a tough decision at the time. I took a few months off. And then came along Hempalta, but I'll pause there and let you digest that.
So maybe we could just touch on just the entrepreneurship journey, because like you said, you mentioned bruises. And I think bruises are really a badge of honor at the end of the day, because you probably learned so much throughout that entire process, right? So right now, when you're looking back on that, what do you feel like was the most important lesson from obviously going from bankruptcy on the corporation side and then selling a PubCo for 130 million? I mean, I'm not just saying this, that's very inspiring, but what did you learn throughout that process?
Yeah, I think the underlying toe for me and the underlying lesson and the bruises is really trust your gut. A few times I've gone against that gut decision, because either we needed the capital or we needed a deal or some form of desperation. And I've generally found that those decisions have been the most costly. They've been the most bruising. They're the most time consuming and energy sucking. So I think that's a huge part of it. If something's not right, then don't do it. If you know something's not working, be quick to pivot, so that you don't keep getting sucked into a bad situation or making a bad situation worse. So I think those are the biggest lessons that that have come out of all of these experiences.
Interesting.
And so before we get a little more into Hempalta, was it something that you learned in the marijuana industry that kind of gave you an aha moment to help you kind of transition into the hemp? Or was this something that kind of a light bulb switch that happened after you got out of that space?
I've always been interested in industrial hemp. I mean, probably because I loved cannabis so much. So when cannabis or industrial hemp became legal in Canada 30 years ago, to me at the time, I was like, oh, great, weed's legal, but little beknownst to me, it was completely separate. So, over the years, I've learned about it. And then while we were in the cannabis space, I was also interested in what was happening in the industrial hemp space. But, the industry is starting to emerge in Canada, but I didn't see that much progress overall on the industrial hemp side, and then cannabis just took over as the main story. The industrial hemp side had always kind of been on the sideline for me and something that had interested me. I didn't think I'd be in the space, but here we are.
So you could say that I guess the hemp industry as a whole kind of needed a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit or energy to kind of come in and start shaking things up again.
You know what? It's a really accurate statement, and I guess one of my entrepreneurial, at the risk of sound, I don't know, my entrepreneurial superpowers, I guess, is that I feel that I can see opportunity. And Nick, you nailed it, because that's exactly what I saw in the industrial hemp space. I saw a lot of great work by scientists. I saw a lot of great work by researchers. A few companies certainly made some great headway on the food side. Manitoba Harvest is a great Canadian success story selling hemp parts, which people are familiar with. But really, we had not seen a lot of progress on the industrial hemp side. So what do the farmers do with these big 1,000-pound bales after they harvest for seed? What happens to them? And in southern Alberta, what we learned was they're just sitting on farmers' fields, and they were burning them or composting them or trying to work it back to their fields But there had not been a lot of advancement. And I definitely think that with some entrepreneurial spirit, some branding, some capital markets expertise, that we had the opportunity to make a difference in the industry as a whole.
So tell us about Hempelta then. Now, like, give us a little quick, little basic understanding of what Hempelta is, or who they are.
I will for sure. And it'll also explain how I ended up getting into this space and how an
Yeah, go.
entrepreneur finds an opportunity. I literally was unemployed. I just sold the company. I took some time off, and I guess I had one more kick, and I wanted to take, to Dan's earlier question, I wanted to take everything I learned over the last 25 years and start something not entirely from scratch, but start a new company and do it the way I want to do it from zero, not emerging out of bankruptcy, not right out of university and not knowing what the heck I was doing. But so I was literally looking through Yellow Page ads on Google, businesses for sale in Calgary. And I had some parameters that I wanted, and I went through a lot of restaurants and bars for sale. That was not the industry I wanted to be in, and then saw right before my eyes an industrial hemp processing facility that was for sale. So seemed like a natural progression and fit. Reached out to a company called Canadian Greenfield Technologies, who had done a lot of research and innovation in inventing an industrial hemp processing machine that could take these bales off farmers' fields and process them into four different outputs that would allow us to create high-value products. So Canadian Greenfield Technologies is an engineering firm. They're not a marketing and capital firm, but they developed this incredible technology that I felt we could take from the point that they had gotten it to getting a facility going, which saved us a couple of years of hassle, and then putting our expertise in it to bring it to the next level. So essentially what we do is we take these 1,000-pound bales off farmers' fields across southern Alberta, which were formerly agricultural waste. We run them through our facility here, through what's called the hemp train system, and we get these four different outputs. And we put these four outputs into a number of materials that which we then products that we then sell at retail. So animal bedding, which I didn't even know was a thing, but we have a way healthier form of animal bedding, a more sustainable animal bedding than straw, which is traditionally used. Cat litter. Dan, you referred to hempcrete, which is an emerging market for us, garden mulch, and those kind of things. So we now have what was formerly waste that goes into high value, more sustainable products that consumers can use instead of something that's not sustainable or perhaps even toxic for houses or animals.
And I think that has always been sort of the misconception about hemp and cannabis, because I think, and I correct me if I'm wrong, back in like the, I don't know if it was the 80s or 70s, but they literally made hemp illegal, but it wasn't a narcotic. And over time, there were studies that came out and said, hey, like there's so many different ways that this product or this solution can actually be applied. It's almost universal, right? So not only are you touching like, food or pet products or like building, like the hemp can be applied to like almost anything. Like I use hemp cream for crying out loud. Like there's value in that too. So is that, that's what I found so interesting was just when we were looking at your company last night, like there's a lot of different avenues that can generate revenue over the course of the lifespan ultimately of this company, right? So is that how you've also positioned it as well? It's like there's huge opportunity here right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Hemp, you're right, Dan. Hemp can be used in over 25,000 different products. So, the opportunities are vast, and hemp was outlawed actually much earlier than that. I think I can't remember the exact year, but in the 30s or 40s. It was only until about 30 years ago when it became legal in Canada, and then in 2018 in the US when hemp became legal again. Anything below 0.3% THC is industrial hemp. So that can be grown and used for all of these different uses that you alluded to. We've decided to focus on a few different areas. I mean, you got to focus your business, and now we're just working on maximizing the sales and the revenue on the manufacturing side, which was the core start and the core foundation of Hempalta.
So what kind of some of the problems you think that the industry as a whole currently has that you guys kind of figured out there's problems with that you can kind of optimize or kind of bring some solutions to the ecosystem?
Yeah. Well, look, the legal issue was number one, but I think that's being resolved. Number two, I thought that the industry could really use help with branding, marketing, and sharing the message of what industrial hemp is. Yes, it's the cannabis plant, but it's no THC, it's not toxic, but it was really just amplifying the voice of the entire industrial hemp industry. So, there are some companies who've done a great job, but I really felt that we could use our marketing and branding expertise to not only benefit Hempalta, but and all of our stakeholders, but to do the same for the entire industry. And I believe, really, in a very short period of time, in a couple of years, we've been able to do that, just on what we believe, our mission and our values, of course, but also just the products that we're able to put out that are now on shelves at major retailers or online at major retailers across North America, just so people can actually understand what industrial hemp can be used for. And I think that's been the biggest stigma and challenge so far for the industry, but I think we're starting to break through.
Why do you feel like that is, though, in terms of the challenge? Is it because there's this, the devil's lettuce sort of like aura that's around it, or like what specifically in your mind do you feel like it is with the challenge
Yeah,
of?
I think that's a big part of it. People just really not understanding what everybody says hemp. Oh, can I smoke it? Well, no, you don't want to smoke this hemp, trust me. But it can be used for all these different 25,000 uses. So I think it's all obviously being coupled with cannabis on the recreational side and the medicinal side. But there's all these other uses that it can be used for that just it haven't been shared and it hasn't been executed or implemented.
Correct.
So
And
that's what we're working on.
what's interesting too is the fact that you kind of have this sort of tailwind now where like so in terms of like let's go in environmental and ESG type stuff, I'm more of a guy that believes that it's more of the market and entrepreneurial energy to kind of push that movement forward rather than a top-down solution, because it's the marketplace that really fundamentally solves problems. So it's really interesting to see solutions like this come out, because you really do have that tailwind that things need to change, but things need to change at a fundamental level where we come up with new solutions, new technologies, new innovative ways to substitute old industries that didn't do the job. So can you talk a little bit about some of the sectors that you're trying to really shake up or change?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great point. And I think the biggest opportunity and one that we're really excited about, and Dan alluded to earlier as well, is in hempcrete. So, what is hempcrete? It's actually not a form of concrete. Hempcrete is an alternative form of building insulation. So, if you think about it, you build a house and you live in a house and then you insulate it with fiberglass toxic insulation and you breathe that, your family breathes that for the rest of their lives, essentially. It's crazy. And that is what is being accepted because it's in the building codes. But effective January 1st of 2024, hempcrete was added to the US building code in 49 of 50 states. So hempcrete is basically taking the inner core of the hemp plant, which needs to be processed. So we extract the herd. It's called the herd. It's then mixed with hydrated lime. And it forms a way superior form of building insulation in a house. It can be installed by blowing it in or through block form. And it's better for the environment. It's actually carbon absorbing. So if you want to build a neutral, a carbon neutral house, you need to insulate it with hempcrete. It breathes better. It's fire retardant and it's a way superior form of insulation. So how do we get that across the market? Well, adding it to the building code is huge. Now we have to get adoption by consumers that say they want this and they'd rather insulate their house with a healthier form of insulation, which I think everybody does. That's more sustainable and better for your family. But it's a no-brainer. So I think we're right at the forefront of something pretty amazing.
Is it competitively cost competitive, or is it something that's
It
similar in
is.
price?
We can provide it for the exact same price today, which is great. I think originally it has been a little bit more expensive, but there's been one major thing that we've been able to develop here at Hempalta. We just announced last week, which was the purchase of the hemp carbon standard. And I can go into those that a little bit more detail, but that allows us to be competitive. We could even give away the insulation now because of our ability to sequester the hemp and into a house. So yeah, we're really going to shake things up.
But
I was
go
also
into
going to
that.
say that
Go down.
the hempcrete is actually, it's fantastic because there's no mold,
Correct.
right? And that seems to be the biggest problem when houses are around for, you know, hundreds of years, 40 plus years. There's all this mold that builds up. And
especially
then
in
when
humid
mold,
places. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when mold builds up, you got, you know, bugs and insects rolling around there. So it almost like the current standard just creates more long-term problems for the homeowner that all, you know, hempcrete would just basically solve in a nutshell, right? So that,
and the
that's
qualitative 100%. The qualitative value said, right, like if you have a lot of these factors, your health can, it just, it's a less of a risk you need to worry about in terms of impacting your health negatively. That's more of a qualitative factor that, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily think about when they build out houses or infrastructures. And do you think, is there a cooling component to it? Like, does it help keep things a little cooler also?
Yeah, it's more natural. You know, the air naturally breathes through a hempcrete home. So if you've ever been in one, you're like, you almost like you're breathing fresh air. So it actually helps insulate your home. It has the same R value as regular insulation. But it's just a lot more breathable. And I think when people have been in or spent any time in a house like that, you're like, well, it just feels different.
Yeah. So tell us about the carbon. It's a carbon credit that you have partnered up, right? So tell us about it. Give us a little breakdown of how it works and how you go about implementing this.
Yeah. So look, as we talked about earlier, I saw a huge opportunity in the industrial hemp space as a whole in the industry. I didn't know exactly what form it would come in. So we saw the manufacturing side, which I knew was a good business. Tough to scale it because of the CapEx required for these plants. Every one of these plants is $5 to $10 million to put up. But the one thing that we knew about industrial hemp as well is that it's the number one carbon sequestering crop that you can grow in the world. So while it's growing, it's absorbing carbon and it's storing it in its roots in the stock. But nobody's been able to figure out how to really monetize those carbon credits that are generated from it. So we ended up partnering with a company called the Hemp Carbon Standard, who uses the most incredible technology, which is now being accepted by as a universal standard, where we're able to measure a farmer's field anywhere in the world by using satellite data and flux towers to accurately measure, report, and verify the amount of carbon that is being sequestered by the hemp field. So our first pilot year in 2023, we had 15 farms, 30 sites, or 45 sites. We measured 3,400 acres, which ended up sequestering over 12,000 tons of carbon, which is quite a lot. And then when you take that hemp stock, right, you have to do something with it. So then when you take it and you process it and you put it into something like hempcrete, which we talked about, that carbon becomes sequestered for 100 years. And that's a very valuable carbon credit. Today would sell for over $100. So all of a sudden, when I said, hey, look, we can insulate a house and give it for free because we can offset the price of that with the carbon credits, we've just found a beautiful, scalable business that is, you know, going to be a great result for our stakeholders and also a great result for farmers who are growing this and a great result for the entire world, really, that they can use these products and simultaneously sequester hemp and do good for the environment and help fight climate change.
Now,
so that was a mouthful. I'm happy to answer some questions on that. But yeah, it's an incredible technology.
No, it's very fascinating. Now, with regards to, I guess, the retail strategy, right? You're obviously not going to be your own retailer, so you've established those relationships. Maybe talk to us and what should investors ultimately be on the lookout, I guess, these next couple of quarters as you continue to grow your revenue at a distribution level with the retailers that you have?
Yeah, so we've done a pretty good job so far of getting some major retailers. We're in PV Mart with some of our products, which has over 100 stores across Canada. We're in the UFA, which has 45 stores. And then online, we're at Lowe's, Home Depot, Amazon, Lowe's, Amazon, and Tractor Supply. So a number of major retailers. So we're starting to see some really good traction on a number of our products. The number one seller for us today is animal bedding, which I didn't even know was a thing when we started out and I bought the business. But people want a more sustainable animal bedding for their products. We're actually a sponsor of the Calgary Zoo. That's being endorsed, where we replaced the entire giraffe's enclosure. They were using straw, and now they use hemp, which is a much softer for their hooves and a much better thing. So as we progress over the next couple of quarters, I think you'll see some modest growth in our retails distribution and our overall revenue. And then we're just working on the completion of a 6,500 square foot add-on to our facility here, which we think will really help optimize our outputs and ability to sell more product at retail. So that's the number one growth strategy at retail. And then the second part of our revenue generation will be in the carbon credit realization. So if you look at Tesla as an example, and you look at their revenue, I can't remember the exact percentage it was last quarter, but a very significant part of their revenue comes from carbon credit sales. So as you start seeing our retail distribution and our revenue generate from there, you'll also start seeing some revenue generate from carbon credits, which are, high margin yields and will really help drive the overall revenue of our business.
How has the feedback been in terms of introducing the carbon credits for clients or partnerships or relationships that you think has it been well received?
Yeah, really good. So that's our number one focus right now is on selling the 12,354 tons of carbon that were generated from our 2023 pilot year. And we're really looking forward to sharing some of those results of those efforts in the coming weeks.
Nice. Okay, cool.
And, so maybe, go ahead, Nick.
What I was going to say was so I know you laid it out before, you the kind of different type of products that you're currently working on. So basically, just to kind of get a general sense, so you have your state-of-the-art hemp train.
Yes.
You pop in the feed produces these type of outputs. You said four type of outputs, correct?
Yes, correct.
So with those four type of outputs, then you utilize those outputs and you produce different product lines. Is that
Bang.
right? Okay,
Yeah.
perfect. So in that, is there more R&D you guys are developing to try to create new product lines to keep using those outputs?
Yeah, I think we're really happy
Which
with the results of the products that we've got
okay.
to date. So as I say, animal bedding is a really good one. We're having good success with our cat litter, our garden mulch. But we are working with a couple of major oil and gas companies here in Alberta to
Interesting.
substitute some of the things like sawdust is in huge demand. Whereas we know industrial hemp actually is a better absorbing, better provides better absorption than sawdust. So there are some commercial uses that we're currently doing some R&D on, but I think that the products, the consumer products that you see on our website today that we just talked about, I think we kind of found our niche and
Perfect.
found the products that we wanted to hit.
And you guys want to expand vertically in a sense, you guys don't produce the hemp itself, but is that something you guys potentially see you guys yourselves doing?
Yeah, we're not farmers, and there's so many farmers, particularly around our
Correct.
facility in Southern Alberta, who are already growing for seed that need to move this stock. That at this time, I don't think it makes sense for us to be the grower. I think we're happy to work with these farmers and
Yeah.
take they're the experts, and it's not
Correct. Yeah.
easy. So we're happy to take these bales off their field and partner with them.
Yeah, but plus it's more, I find it keeps you more flexible and adaptive to the environment because if you necessarily depend on your own stock, if something happens to your stock, you're kind of stuck. Whereas now you're malleable, I can go wherever I need to go to make sure I can just keep feeding my train or your hemp train.
Yeah, exactly. And we need thousands of acres, right? So I
Okay.
mean, it's
So.
a, we work with dozens of farmers
Yeah,
across
exactly.
southern Alberta to help our supply.
Fair enough.
So it's so fascinating because you're a serial entrepreneur. You've learned a lot. This is a very interesting business because it's so unique. And I mean,
It's timely. Yeah.
the branding that you've put together is very, it's very interesting as well. So
Thank you.
I guess going forward, what should investors really expect from the company? Stocks trading, I believe, at 18 cents. I mean, for micro cap, small cap investors, I'll look at anything under 30 cents. But what do you feel like investors should be paying attention to, and what's really on the horizon to get people excited?
Yeah, well, we're very early stage, so let me put it at that. I mean,
Correct.
most companies don't go public after 2 years of 2 years, but we wanted to do that because we felt that look, that I see the opportunity at hand as something that should be widely owned, no different than I did in the recreational cannabis space. It shouldn't be owned by one person. I think the our potential investors and our existing stakeholders should look at two things. One, the progression of the revenue from the manufacturing side. But the exciting thing, I think, will really come as we start to realize the benefits of the hemp carbon standard, which is fully scalable on a global basis just by using software and technology. So while we had, 15 farms and 45 sites and 3,400 acres under management in just year one, which sequestered 12,000 plus tons of carbon, we can't wait to share our 2024 numbers. We're just finalizing them with our farmers now. But you know, if we can sequester over 100,000 tons of carbon in the next fiscal year and sell those carbon credits, which get shared amongst us and our farmers and the hemp carbon standard, I think that's really where the growth story is going to be told.
Nice. And are you planning on possibly doing a listing on the US side, or is it really just, hey, let's just see?
There's opportunity to list on the OTC, which is a pretty simple listing. Mm-hmm. So that, it makes it a little bit easier for US shareholders. With the hemp carbon standard, we gained a number of international shareholders. We'll look at some additional listings as part of it. But look, everybody has access to the Toronto Stock Exchange. It's the number one exchange in Canada. And just getting that thing to fruition was, takes elbow grease and capital. So step by step.
Awesome. So just something I wanted to say to the listeners is, I'm a big believer in voting with your money and your dollars. And this is a perfect example of where you may not necessarily want to invest in something, but you can also support them or support the environment in a sense that there's products out there that you can consume. And that to me is the greatest impact of voting with your dollar. I find that solves more problems fundamentally. So this is a really cool way to kind of say, you can invest, these are type of ideas you can invest in, or these are the type of things that can provide you with product lines that you can buy as just a consumer. If you have a cat or an animal or something, or if you are in the industrial space, or if you have a zoo or you're a farm.
Yeah, or even just gardening, right?
I mean, correct, exactly, that too.
Water is a huge issue right now for many, for the world. Using our hemp mulch in your garden is healthier for your soil. It helps regenerate your soil. Mm. It conserves water. So I think we've got some products that everybody Absolutely. Can relate to and mm-hmm. support.
And there's a trend now. I find a lot more people want to kind of start farming on their own. There's this independence trend where produce your own goods in the backyard, farm on your own. And I know a lot of I'm Italian, and a lot of my family in Montreal, they all have their own little gardens in the back that they all produce their stuff. So it's cool to know that there's other products that we can go. And this is cool because now it's something I can share with my network and my family that, guys, I heard about this, check it out. And also it's cool. So guys, like I said, voting with your dollars, whether you invest, you buy products, these are the type of options out there that exist in the marketplace.
Agreed.
Well, Darren, this has been awesome. This company is definitely on our watch list. Do you have any last words, I guess, before we hop off here?
No, we're really excited about what we're doing. We think we can make a positive impact on the entire world with what we're doing. And, I think when you do good and you put your energy out there and, everybody can benefit, I think we've got a winner here.
Mm-hmm. Of course, absolutely.
Well, really appreciate you coming on. And for everybody listening, you can find Hemp Alta on the TSXV under the ticker HEMP. Very easy to remember, just hemp. And we'll see you guys next time on the New Gen Capital Markets series.
Ciao, guys. Take care.
Thanks, guys.